Hi, I'm Frank Ferris, one of the principals of the Palliative Care Interdisciplinary Curriculum. I want to personally thank you for joining us for this module in our series on communications.
Hello, I'm Jillian Gustin. I'm the Division Director of Palliative Medicine at The Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio. And today we're going to talk about shared decision making. Our objectives today are one, to define patient-centered communication, and then two, to describe skills to allow you to actually employ patient-centered communication. Before we get started, I want to thank VitalTalk. This is a national organization that focuses on teaching empathic communication to physicians, APPs, and other members of the interdisciplinary team. They have very graciously allowed us to use some of their materials, and we would suggest that you all take a look at their website, vitaltalk.org. So let's get started. Communication skills. Why do we care? Well, it's what we would want for ourselves and for our family members. We want effective communication. We know when we look at the literature that it improves patient satisfaction. It helps identify the patient's problems. It increases adherence to treatment, improves health outcomes, decreases malpractice lawsuits, and interestingly, enhances the well-being of us as the medical professionals. We also know that it's a skill, and it turns out that clinicians are not very good at it. We don't always explore patient values. We often divert ourselves from those things that we find very uncomfortable to talk about. And when there is distress, we often don't see it. But we also know that as clinicians, we can learn how to do this. Great communication is when you have the ability to handle difficult situations, when you don't shy away from things that feel emotionally burdensome, and when you have tools in your toolbox that you can pull out when you need them to help you communicate effectively with patients and families. So let's talk about what is a person-centered approach to communication. And very simply, it's about being curious. It's recognizing that for a patient, they are much more than the physical manifestations of their illness, and we need to be the ones to explore that. I think of it as just a shared communication tool. So it's the idea that we need to elicit patients' perspective. We need to understand that patients live in a very broad context with all sorts of factors that impact how they think about their health, their illness, and their decisions. It's the idea of reaching a shared understanding and sharing power with your patients to ensure that the choices that they make, they feel like they are meaningfully involved. So let's get to the meat of this talk. What is shared decision making? There are many elements to shared decision making, but I want us to really focus on two. The first is, can we exchange information between the clinician and the patient and or family about what truly is the patient's values? How are they making sense of their illness? And then as we develop a treatment plan, can we achieve consensus that's predicated on that patient's values and preferences for how they want to view their illness and their goals for the rest of their life? So let me introduce you to a conceptual model for shared decision making. And here you can see shared decision making is in the middle, and it consists of four circles that come together as a Venn diagram. And we're going to keep revisiting this conceptual model throughout the rest of this talk. Here you can see it in its full form with all the different elements and the skills surrounding it on the outside. So let's drill down a little bit deeper. Typically, What we see when clinicians are working with patients and their families is that their discussions focus primarily on just the giving of information. And what we find is when it becomes time to actually make a plan, they've forgotten all of those other circles that are just as important to achieving shared decision making. And often, the treatment plan falls flat. So let's dig into those five elements. The first is assessing patient perspective. The second, which we've already talked about, is exchanging information. The third is attending to emotion. And finally, managing uncertainty. If you focus on all of these areas, it's going to be much easier to get to the shared decision-making piece where you say to a patient or their family member, I've heard all the things that are important to you. I understand there's uncertainty. I think we can come up with a plan that's focused on your values and your goals. That is shared decision-making. So let's drill down into that conceptual model and think about the five elements and their associated tools. And here you can see it in its entirety. We're going to focus our first one on assessing patient perspective. The first skill that goes with assessing patient perspective is ask, tell, ask. So before we can even begin to think about what a treatment plan should be that's predicated on a patient's values and goals, we need to find out what do they know about their illness and how are they experiencing it. So that first ask is really about what's their understanding. Help me know what the other doctors have told you. What have you read on the internet about your illness? How is it impacting your life? You may also want to ask about who they want involved when we're having these discussions. Do they want their partner, their son, their daughter, their friend? Additionally, there are some folks who really want to know all the information that you can give them, and there's others that really find that overwhelming. So ask, how much information do you want to get? And then you'll know as the clinician how much you should provide. The next step is the tell, and we'll spend a little more time on this further in the talk. But for now, keep in mind that when you're giving medical information, think about how you can do it in a very straightforward way with minimal jargon so that you can ensure the information you're trying to get across is received. To ensure that, you need to ask again. First, if they have any questions from what they've heard from you, and then did they actually understand what you said? Often I'll say to a patient, hey, I know you're going to go home and tell your husband or your wife or your child about what we talked about. Can you tell me what you're going to tell them so I can make sure I've done a good job communicating it to you? You'll want to make sure you're on the same page before you move forward. The other piece to assessing patient perspective is to recognize that a lot of it has to do with active listening. Our patients give us many nonverbal cues about how they're experiencing their illness and how they feel. So watch to see, are they closed off? Are they holding their back in pain? Can you keep having this conversation based on their symptom burden? Sometimes it's just important to be quiet. Let them talk. Let them tell their story. Share their experience. And then another skill you can try is something that we call reflective questioning. So if a patient tells you about their experience, say it back. I think I hear you say that this has been a really hard journey for you. Am I getting that right? That's active listening. So let's move on to the tell, exchanging information, making sure that you're giving clear information so that a patient can hear it. This is really all about trying to get on the same page. It's hard to make decisions if you're on page one and they're on page 10 or vice versa. So, how do we do the tell? Well, interestingly, in journalism, and I remember learning writing in elementary school and high school, you're supposed to start with that topic sentence, that headline, and then you build the rest of the story from there. So interestingly, in medicine, we flip this on its head. We often start with lots of information, and then slowly, 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 after we go through every system and every medication and every test, we get to what the headline is. And I would challenge all of you to try and do the tell as if you were a journalist. So, when you're giving serious news, think about it as, let me give the headline first. And if you're of a younger generation than me, it could be even be considered a tweet. So give the headline, give the tweet, make sure that you're including the information that's important, but also the meaning, and then stop. And let your patient or their family member take a moment to process what you've told them. Let me give you an example. Here is an old headline from a newspaper. The information is, the Berlin Wall tumbles. That's important information to get, but what does that mean? So we need to add the meaning. It's the beginning of the end of communism. How does that work for us in medicine? It could be, if we had a patient with cancer, the information we would say is, your CAT scans show that your cancer has progressed. And the meaning might be, this means that the treatments we've been trying are no longer working. Giving the headline, the information with meaning, and then we stop. Take a breath, see how your patient is doing, and then these are my three favorite words. Tell me more. Tell me about what more information you need to make sense of all of this. Tell me more about how you're feeling regarding what I've just told you. Tell me more about what this means to you. And the purpose of this is just to try and figure out, where is your patient coming from? How are they coping? How are they processing the information that you've given them? And remember, if that headline or that tweet landed, it is likely that they will have emotion. You've just given them bad news, and that's not something that we can make better. Bad news is just bad news. So know that if the emotion comes, and we'll talk in a minute about how you manage that emotion, it's okay. It means you've done a good job. You've landed a very clear headline. So let's move on to our next circle, attending to emotion. We know that how we process information is very different as clinicians than it is for our patients and their families. So for us, we tend to approach conversations like these from a cognitive channel, where we're focused on data and scans and labs, and we're always thinking one or two steps ahead about what we might or might not do in terms of treatments. For our patients and their families, they've just been hit by some pretty devastating news. And so they're going to have that fight or flight response, which is just hardwired into our brains as humans, and they are processing things on an emotional channel. So if you think about our patients are on that emotional channel, and we are on that cognitive channel, and we try and talk to each other, we just miss. So how can we go from that cognitive channel up to where they are, up here, to that emotional one, and see if we can meet them there? Can we attend to the emotions that they're having regarding the really difficult news that you just gave them? There is a wonderful mnemonic out there called NURSE that comes from vitaltalk.org. Please go to their website and you will see it there and get more information about it. NURSE are types of statements you can make to attend to the emotion of your patient. We're not asking you to fix their emotions. You can't do that. We're not asking you to take their emotions away. We're just asking you to acknowledge them, validate them, recognize them. So let's walk through each of these. A naming statement is a way of saying, I think I know what kind of emotion you're having, and I'm just going to put it out there, and you tell me if I'm getting it right. So it could be something like, it seems like you're really concerned about what I've just said. Or it seems like this is very shocking. An understand statement is really a statement of empathy. That ultimately, you can't step into their shoes. You're not them. We all experience illness very differently. But you can't imagine it. So often I'll say to patients, I can only imagine how hard this must be to hear. When it's particularly devastating, I might even say, I can't even imagine what this must feel like. A respect statement is a way of saying, hey, I know you've worked really hard to get here. You've worked through all those treatments that I've given you, and we respect how difficult this must be. So you might say something like, I'm so impressed that you've been by your loved one's bedside in the ICU every day since he's been here. We don't always see that. We know as human beings, we love to be appreciated and validated for the things that we do. So appreciate your patients and appreciate their families. A support statement is next. There's actually quite a bit of literature that shows many of our patients feel abandoned at the end of life. And so we want to make sure that no matter what happens, they know that we're going to be with them. So a simple statement like, I'll be with you throughout this. And then finally, an explore statement. There are those three little words that I love so much. Tell me more. It could be, tell me more what you're thinking. Tell me more how you're feeling. Tell me more how this may impact you. These are all statements that you can make to just attend, validate, and recognize how our patients are experiencing the news that you've just given them. And the hope is, by doing so, you can take them from that emotional frenzy that they're having, and you can help bring the temperature down on those emotions so you can move forward and talk about what are those next steps. Let's move on to number 4, managing uncertainty. What we know is that for many of our patients with serious illness, there is a lot of uncertainty about what the future looks like, what the treatment options might be, what their prognosis is. So how can we start to partner with them around that uncertainty? There is a skill that we call hope and worry, and it can be used in 2 different ways. The first is you can use hope and worry as a way to assess the prognostic awareness of your patient. So it's a way of asking them, hey, based on what we've talked about so far, what are you hoping for? And what are you worried about? Sometimes if you just stick with the hope, you're going to hear, well, I'm hoping I can be cured. And you think, wow, this patient's in denial. But if you take that next step and you say, and what are you worried about? You might find that they truly understand what's going on and they can say, yeah, I'm hoping to be cured, but I'm really worried I'm not going to make it to my son's high school graduation. That gives you some data about where they're coming from and what their true understanding is about their prognosis. Let's say they really don't have a good sense of where their illness is going. You can use hope and worry to promote prognostic awareness. So you can say, would it be okay for me to share what I'm hoping for and what I'm worried about for you? Most of the time, patients will say, sure. And so you can say, hey, I'm really hoping that these treatments will work and will give you many more years. I'm really worried, based on your disease, that that may not happen. Can we talk about it? And often that's enough to just move the conversation forward a little bit to help those patients know what you're really thinking in your brain about what the future looks like. Finally, as part of Hope and Worry, it's a way to reframe hope. So can we have what we call a dual agenda? Can we hope for the best? And can we prepare for the rest, knowing that the rest is probably not an outcome that they want? And most folks are used to that. We do that all the time when we think about our cars. We all get car insurance, right? We hope we never get in a car accident, but we worry about it, and so we get this insurance to make sure we're protected. It's the same idea here. The other tool for managing uncertainty is something called the I wish statement. It's a way to really cultivate partnership with your patients. I kind of think about it as if they're sitting on a bench, that I'm going to come sit beside them and we'll walk this journey together. It's a way of suspending your medical expertise and saying, I'm a human too, and I can't even imagine. So an I wish statement might be, I wish I had more answers for you as to why your husband's body is responding the way it is if their loved one is in the ICU. You're not giving them any answers. You're acknowledging that there's real uncertainty, and sometimes as clinicians, we just don't have all the answers. Finally, I do want to take a moment to talk about non-abandonment. And I mentioned this earlier as we were talking about the nurse mnemonic, that we know many of our patients feel abandoned at the end of life. So can we make sure that they feel that we're going to be present, we're going to honor their preferences, and we'll be with them throughout their illness trajectory? A great way to make sure that they don't feel abandoned by us is to support the evolution of that concept of hoping for the best and preparing for the rest, recognizing that that will shift over time. So now that we've reviewed all of those four circles, let's put it all together. Let's get to the meat, how we get to the shared decision-making piece. There's a wonderful mnemonic called REMAP that I want you to remember, and we've borrowed it from Vital Talk. It goes through the steps to get to shared decision making. Think of it like a talking map or a roadmap to come up with a plan that matches the patient's values and goals. So let's walk through each of these one by one. So the reframe. This is the tell. This is about making sure we are all on the same page based on where the patient is in their illness. And it might be something like, we're in a different place today than we were before. Or, we're at a point where more treatments are unlikely to make you feel better, and they may make you feel worse. These are types of headlines. And what do we know about headlines? When we give them, people are going to have an emotional reaction. So we need to respond to that. That's where we respond empathically. We use active listening, those reflective statements, the compassionate silence, reading those nonverbal cues. And we use that nurse mnemonic that we talked about earlier, which are type of statements you can say to attend to emotion, such as, I can see you're really concerned. Tell me more about how you're feeling. What does this mean to you? I can't even imagine how you must be feeling. If you're able to attend to that emotion and you can bring the temperature down that your patient is feeling, then where we want to go next is mapping. We want to know what are the most important patient values and goals, so we can come up with a plan moving forward that matches those. So how do we do that? We need to ask. This is really all about being curious. So the types of questions you might ask could be, What's your life like outside the hospital? What do you enjoy doing? Given where we are today, what's most important to you? When you think about the future, are there things that you want to do and are there things that you want to avoid? And then my other favorite words, so we talked about the tell me more as my three favorite words. Well, my two favorite words are what else? So when you're mapping out a patient's values, tell me what's important. They may give you one value, but that's probably not enough for you to know what the plan should be. So ask, what else? They may say, I want to make sure I'm not in pain. Okay, what else? I want to make sure that my kids are taken care of. Okay, and what else? Keep asking until they've run out of things for them to tell you. Sometimes you're not mapping with a patient. You're actually mapping with their surrogate. I know this happens often to me in the ICU when I'm seeing patients there. It's still the same questions, but you tweak it slightly because you don't really know this person. So ask the surrogate, hey, can you tell me about your dad? What does he like to do? What's important to him? And you may even be able to get to a harder question, which is, hey, if your dad was sitting right beside me, what would his biggest concern be? What would he say to us? It's a way to help that surrogate move out of the role of being the loved one, because clearly they want their loved one to stay with them, and help them get to be the voice for the patient. If you've done a good job getting all those values and preferences, your next step in the remap mnemonic is to align with the values. So this is really a way of you reflecting back what you've heard. So as I listen to you, it sounds like what's most important is that you're home with your kids. I think we can help you do more of that by getting an agency like hospice involved. And by planning ahead, we can avoid things like having you come back to the hospital. If you've done that alignment, then you can finally get to that shared decision-making piece, the plan. What are you going to do moving forward? We usually start by asking permission. Would it be okay for me to tell you what I'm thinking based on what you've told me is important to you? Usually, if you've done all the hard work, they'll say yes. And then give the plan clearly and concisely. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to get you home. We're going to make sure your pain is well controlled. We're going to make sure that you have all the supports you need in your home. Here's what we're not going to do. We're not going to bring you back to the hospital and put you through procedures that you don't want to do. Does that sound okay? And often what you get is assent from the patient and or the family. That's it. That's shared decision making. I'm hoping what you've seen is that instead of just focusing on that top circle, the purple one, which is just giving information, that if you assess patient perspective, you attend to emotion, you manage the uncertainty, that you will eventually get to a place where you can make, as the clinician, a recommendation about a treatment plan that is aligned with the patient's values and goals and that they will be okay with. So in summary, what I'm hoping you'll take away from today is that communication is a learned skill, and you can do it. Use this conceptual model to help you get to a place where you understand a patient's experience, their values, their goals, so that you can come up with a treatment plan that matches those values and goals. And recognize this doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't always happen over days. Sometimes it can take weeks. Occasionally, it can take hours. It's all about using the skills and reading your patients and their families to make sure you're both on the same page.
Thanks again for tuning in. I hope you'll rate and review this podcast and share it with your colleagues and your friends so you don't miss any of our new content. make sure you are subscribing to PCIC Podcasts. PCIC is sponsored by PalMed, where our aim is to advance palliative care globally and ensure all clinicians have the latest knowledge and skill. To access more PCIC content, please visit palmed.us to review our extensive open access PCIC curriculum.